Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So for those of us who remember our Greek at school, Sophocles wrote a riddle for the Sphinx to pose to Oedipus around 429 BC. And the riddle was, what walks on 4 feet in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, and 3 in the evening? And the answer, of course, was humans. We begin life crawling on 4 feet before we advance to 2 in the afternoon of our life and can inspect infirmity and a cane to walk on 3 in the evening. Why are we mentioning Sophocles and the Sphinx and Oedipus? Well, it's all tied into our next guest, Jeremy De Silva, who joins us now to tell us about his new book, First Steps. Jeremy is a paleoanthropologist and expert on foot and leg bones, and I'm delighted to welcome Jeremy to the show. Morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Just to explain to our listeners, it really is good morning, Jeremy, for you, because explain to our listeners where you are and what time it now is.
Well, I teach at Dartmouth College, which is in New Hampshire, and it is 5:30 in the morning here.
Have you not been to bed, or have you got up early?
I got up nice and early. I'm an early riser. I can get some work done before the kids get up. So this is not too different from what I'm used to.
Fantastic. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and it's a fascinating subject here. I had no idea, and I guess if you think about it, it's obvious that humans are the only mammals that walk on 2 rather than 4 legs. But I guess from an evolutionary perspective, that's probably not a great thing because it slows us down. So through the ages, there must have been a very good reason why this happened then, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's right. As you said, we are the only mammals that walk on 2 legs all the time. There are other mammals that will occasionally move on 2 legs, like a bear or a chimpanzee. And of course, kangaroos hop around on 2 legs all the time. But what we're talking about is this striding one leg at a time locomotion that's exceptionally unusual in the animal world. You actually have to go to the terrestrial birds to find another animal that does this. And even then, as you say, because we evolved from apes that were living in the trees and had muscles for fine grasping in their feet and in their legs, we're actually really, really, really slow. And so it's been challenging for scientists to figure out the whys of the origins of upright walking. Why did we start moving on 2 legs? Because there are all of these disadvantages in terms of speed, in terms of a vulnerability to injury, as many of your listeners probably are well aware, if they have a sore back or knee or foot. And so this is something we're still trying to figure out as scientists.
Now, figuring it out is your life's work, really. And you've been all over the world, I have to say, to try and find out why this is the case. Some amazing stories to tell, which we'll go on to in a moment. Some terms to discuss and get clear, I think, in our heads. Firstly, hominin, species related to or close to humans.
Yeah, that's right. So humans are closely related to the African great apes, chimpanzees, bonobos, and gorillas. It doesn't mean we evolved from them. They live today. They're our cousins. So instead, we share a common ancestor with them that we can estimate from genetic comparisons and from the fossil record. Lived about 6 or 7 million years ago, most likely in Africa.
Right.
And we find lots and lots and lots of fossils in Africa, Eastern Africa, the Great Rift Valley, and then Southern Africa in cave sites. And these fossils that we find have characteristics that are more in common with you and I than with a chimpanzee. Mm. They show evidence of upright walking. They show evidence of reduced canine tooth size. So our fang tooth is actually quite small compared to other primates. And when we see anatomies like that, that link these fossils to us rather than to a chimpanzee, we call them hominins. Exactly. So they would be more closely related to us than to anything else.
Let's have our first stop in Ethiopia in your book in Addis Ababa. And you went there and held, I mean, it just didn't beg his belief to even say this, 3.18 million year old bones of the oldest, most complete skeleton of an upright walking hominin, who is a female who is named Lucy. I'm assuming you've named her that as opposed to having some kind of name tag attached to the skeleton.
Yeah, so the scientific community, in fact, it was the researchers who first discovered this extraordinary skeleton in the 1970s. They were listening to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's over and over and over again to celebrate her discovery. And somebody recommended they name her Lucy after hearing Lucy the Sky with Diamonds.
So she could have ended up being lovely Rita Meter made then. It wouldn't have been quite the same, would it?
Penny Lane, right? So she is such an extraordinary skeleton, and she's not the only one. She's not the only fossil we have from this time. We've got lots of fossils from this time period, and what they reveal to us is an ancestor of ours. We call it Australopithecus.
Right.
And Australopithecus was quite capable on two legs and could get from here to there in much the same way that we do, but with a head that was much more ape-like. The brain was still relatively small. Mm-hmm. And so that classic image that your listeners may have seen of the chimpanzee slowly turning into the human and all of the differences between us and them evolving in concert, that's not really how evolution works. Mm. And the fossils tell us that. They show us that it was more of a mosaic pattern of upright walking happening long before many of these other changes. And I argue in the book that upright walking is what sets the stage. It's foundational to all of these other changes that happen later in the human lineage.
So fossilized bones, very important. They can only tell part of the story, though. Footprints are the image, I guess, that's worth a thousand words. And back in 2019 in Tanzania, you and a team of students and a colleague discovered, unbelievably, a hominin footprint.
That's right. This is a site known as Laetoli in Tanzania, northern Tanzania. It's not far from the Ngorongoro crater. And this was a site that was discovered long before I arrived on the scene and worked most famously by Mary Leakey in the 1970s.
Right.
She and her team discovered 3.5 million year old or 3.66 million year old footprints, to be more exact, left in volcanic ash. So the volcanic volcano erupted, laid down a bed of ash, it rained, and then the animals came out and walked through the ash, leaving thousands of footprints. And among those animals were hominins, were relatives of you and I, walking on two legs. That's how we know that these were hominins, is they were moving bipedally. So it's one of the greatest discoveries in the history of our science. And so as somebody who's interested in upright walking, this is a holy grail site to me.
Sure.
I had to go see Laetoli. And in 2019, as you said, I went with Charles Musiba, who's a colleague at the University of Colorado Denver, and we brought our students. And yeah, we re-excavated these mysterious footprints that were discovered in the 1970s. We thought they'd probably eroded away, but they were still there. They were still preserved. And we re-excavated them and analyzed them with technology that was just not available to folks in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And we've got some really exciting findings that hopefully will be published in the coming months.
One of the things you did find was that you found groups of both adults and children walking together. What a glimpse into the past that must have been.
So we think so. I mean, we're still struggling to understand the composition of these groups. You know, when you find a small footprint, could that just be a small adult?
Yeah.
And it could be. We have that. There is that possibility. But it also could be a juvenile. But there are the other sites. There are other footprint sites throughout the world, including in Africa, a site in Ethiopia. There's a site in England. There's a site in Spain, in fact, that preserves footprints from the last 500,000 years or so that have a group composition of adults and children. And we can read those footprints and try to figure out what their daily lives were like.
Yeah.
And how they survived on a difficult to survive landscape.
Incredible. At the moment, in the Canary Islands, just off the coast of Portugal at the moment, and Spain, we're suffering in La Palma. They have volcanic eruption right now, and lava is pouring down the hill. And just it's mind-boggling to think that what happens now could be visited by somebody so far in the future to see what we were like.
That's right. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about what I do is when we find these ancient fossils or we find ancient footprints especially, right?
Yeah.
They are impressions left by something that was alive.
Yeah.
The bones we find, they're also fascinating and they reveal something else to us, but they speak more of death. But when you find a footprint, that was something that was living and breathing and thinking and was a lot like us moving across a landscape. It kind of raises the hairs on the back of your neck a little bit.
Absolutely.
To find something like that.
I imagine in years to come, they'll just find imprints of Nike logos all over the place, I would think. Yes.
Right.
Now, something had never struck me, but it makes complete and utter anatomical sense, having read about it in your book, is that a lot of this we need to be born, basically, before we can walk. And the birth canal is very important in this conversation, because the size of the pelvis mustn't be so large as to impede normal walking, but it must be large enough to facilitate birth, something I've never come across before.
Yeah, there's a really fascinating argument in our field that goes back to it goes back to the 1940s into the 1950s about the role of the pelvis in upright walking.
Yeah.
And we can tell that the pelvis is really, really, really important because you can compare it to a chimpanzee's pelvis and it displays one of the most dramatic differences in shape of any bone in our skeleton compared to a chimpanzee's. The pelvis is just wildly different in a human in shape. And that shape is what facilitates upright walking.
Mm.
It repositions muscles around our hip joint so we can balance on one leg when we're walking around on two legs. And it's just not something chimpanzees do very often. And when they do it, they're pretty clumsy at it. They wobble back and forth because they don't have the pelvis shape that we do. But the trade-off here is that pelvis shape that, again, helps us during walking changes the shape of the birth canal.
Yep.
And it makes the birth canal narrow from front to back. And it causes a baby being born to have to corkscrew through the birth canal.
Nice.
And it ends up being facing backwards when it's born. Now, there's a lot of variation here. There are some babies born facing forward. That's called a sunny side up birth.
Right.
But most babies are born facing backwards. And because of that, we think that there is a cultural and social element to birth, that corkscrewing of the baby through the birth canal is going to potentially lead to some problems during birth,
uh-huh.
Some difficulties, labor is going to be long, and having helpers present is going to benefit the the child being born and the mother. Now, what's fascinating to me is that we can take the 3.18 million year old skeleton you described earlier, yes. Lucy, and Lucy has a relatively complete pelvis, and we can simulate birth in Lucy's pelvis, and sure enough, it looks like a baby Australopithecus. Just from the geometry of the pelvis, the baby Australopithecus would have had to have rotated through the birth canal. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's strong evidence that, unlike what we see in some of our ape cousins, that birth was likely a social event in our ancient ancestors as well, and that midwifery is probably one of the oldest human professions.
Goodness me. And I also am fascinated by the fact that you would think that women's wide hips would then impair their gait, and you've done a lot of work into that, including some studies with software for gait recognition.
Yeah, that's right. Again, this is one of these ideas that has been around for a while, but the scientific community hadn't actually tested it. And this happens a lot, that there are hypotheses that are presented and then just assumed to be correct. And then, you know, a new generation of scientists comes along and says, wait a minute, are we sure we're right about this?
Yes.
And they test it, and it turns out not to be correct. And exactly as you said, the width of the pelvis that tends to be slightly wider on women than on men has been assumed to compromise gait. It makes their walking maybe less efficient. And so researchers tested this. Anna Warner, Holly Dunsworth, Kara Wall-Scheffler have looked into this. And what they've all found is that that's not the case at all. And that gait in women is just as efficient as gait in men. And that these wider hips, what ends up happening is it causes slight gait differences, that women tend to have more rotation at the hips when they're walking, but it doesn't compromise walking at all. It's just another way of getting from point A to point B.
The mechanics involved in walking as bipedal humans are interesting, and I guess this is where we're now at a disadvantage, because if we have some problem in one of our legs or one of our ligaments or a knee replacement or whatever, then that kind of really does impede us quite spectacularly, which does set us apart from the others, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. So humans are modified apes, right? We are descended from apes that were very comfortable in the trees, climbing, grasping toes, grasping big toe, mobile hip joints, mobile knees. And over evolutionary time, as upright walking became advantageous to our ancestors, for, again, reasons we're still trying to figure out, could have been energetics, it could have been carrying food or carrying babies, it could have had something to do with thermoregulation, dispersing heat. We're still trying to figure that all out. But what we have inherited is a body plan that you wouldn't have designed from scratch. It's a modified, co-opted ape body plan that now is moving on two legs. So I talk to my students a lot about evolution as a great tinker, modifying pre-existing conditions, and that really what we have in our body as sort of modified ape feet and knees and hips has been tinkered with using the evolutionary equivalent or anatomical equivalent of duct tape and paper clips that were kind of held together in a manner that leads to very often injury. Again, as many of your listeners probably know all too well, collapsed arches, sprained ankles, bunions, knee problems, hip problems. And one of the things that I find absolutely fascinating in the fossil record is that we also find these really traumatic lower limb injuries in our ancestors as well, healed ankle fractures, fractures of the femur. And this is long before doctors and hospitals and casts and crutches, long before buildings and even controlled fire. And so to me, this is strong evidence that, again, bipedalism, upright walking, just like in the case of Lucy giving birth, that the the fact that we move on two legs makes us particularly vulnerable to injury, because now if you injure one, you have to hop around on just one leg, and you are an invitation for to be leopard food.
Yes.
At that point.
Yes.
So how is it that we do find fossils of things with healed fractures that didn't become leopard food? Uh-huh. And I think it's strong evidence for our sociality, that for a long time, we've been looking out for each other, that
wow.
we've been exhibiting compassion and empathy and care for one another because of how vulnerable we are moving slowly on just two legs.
How extraordinary. So when we were sick then, basically, and couldn't walk, our tribe would effectively be responsible for us and look after us.
I think that's right. I think that's what the evidence is telling us. You know, at first, when we only had a couple of fossils that exhibited this kind of interesting healing of a fracture, I don't think we could take that leap. But now we have lots of them, and so I think they're telling us a story about our ancestors exhibiting something that is so wonderfully human, right? Our ability to cooperate with one another and to take care of each other.
Now, of course, they would require a Medicare card, so it'd be slightly different, wouldn't it? Yes, yes.
That's right.
And I guess now the final $64,000 question is then, why have we ended up on two legs? And maybe suggest that it would free up our hands to carry food or children or, of course, to protect ourselves by throwing rocks as weapons, or indeed for building things using tools like sticks. So there is a very good reason why we've ended up this way.
Yeah, that is the $64,000 question. And we are, as a scientific community, are very interested in the time period, fossils from the time period in which bipedalism emerged. So we're talking 5, 6, 7, 8 million years ago, back to the common ancestor that we share with chimpanzees. And even beyond 9 million, 10 million, 11 million, what was the body plan? What did that ancient ape look like? And again, if you know, you think about the coffee cup and t-shirt version of human evolution with the chimp slowly converted into the human, we would expect it to be something knuckle walking. And what's really fascinating is that the fossils we do find from that time period from Africa and also from Southern Europe. And so again, for your listeners, some of these fossils are found in Spain.
Great.
Apes used to live in Southern Europe. They used to live in Spain, wow. France, Germany, Italy, Hungary, Turkey. And the fossils that we find from that time period in those places are of things that are very upright already in the trees, almost like an orangutan or a gibbon today. They don't seem to have the anatomical shapes of their bones for knuckle walking.
Right.
And so it could very well be that upright walking, upright movement, bipedalism itself was not some brand new locomotion, but rather a co-opting of an uprightness that was in the trees onto a new landscape, and that would be more of a grassland environment as the environment was changing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million years ago. Then the question is not where did bipedalism come from, but why didn't we just go extinct?
Yes.
Because it seems like a challenging locomotion on that particular environment. So that's when we start thinking about carrying of objects, food, babies, being able to disperse heat on a hot environment, or maybe energetics, because we are slow. We're super slow as bipeds, but wow, are we energetically efficient getting from point A to point B. So maybe one of those, but I think more likely a combination of those advantages is what set us off on this amazing journey.
Well, it's been incredible to talk to you. Firstly, thank you for getting up at stupid o'clock to talk to us this morning. The book is called First Steps, How Upright Walking Made Us Human, by Jeremy De Silva, and you can get that book from our website, tre.radio. It reminds me of that old gag, Jeremy, why do flamingos stand on one leg? And of course, the answer is if they lifted it up, they'd fall over.
I love it.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Hope the rest of your day goes well, Jeremy. You look after yourself.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it.
All the
best.
It was fun. Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.